What you know you can't explain. But you feel it. You felt it your entire life. That there's something wrong. You don't know what it is, but it's there. Like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. Experience the awakening. Brilliant anonymous researchers. Patriots, join us in the Patriot Army. Trust the plan, pain coming. Boom, boom, boom. Let's go. RedStateTalkRadio.com, Brighteon.tv, Rumble.com/MG Show. The end won't be for everyone. That choice to know will be yours. Where we go one, we go all. Fight, 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 and fight we will. We fight every day right here on the MG Show.
We fight with the mute button every day on the MG Show. There's our wet Yeti. Happy Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy whatever you celebrate, guys. There it is. There's wet Yeti, and he's right there. We fight every day, and we've got an amazing producer. Press 17 for your wet Yeti. He's amazing. Before we go any further, let's bring in my partner in justice, Shady Groove. Shady, welcome.
12/16/2022. Almost just a little less than 10 days till Christmas time. Everybody out there, I'd like to wish you guys a happy holidays from the MG Show. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Just like Jeff said, we love you all very much, and we hope that you have a really, really good holiday season this year, and we would we'd like to get you to share some of the new information that you've learned over the last year with some of your friends and family, because I think that we got a pretty stellar announcement from Donald Trump yesterday, and he didn't really mince any words. Jeff, he told us exactly what he was going to do.
Nope. He didn't mince any words at all. We got, I've got a little graphic about that. We'll go over that, but you know what? I already drank it because it's so good. Brick House Nutrition. We got fieldofgreens.com, fieldofgreens.com, use code MG Show. I am working out. I am losing weight. I need to get a smaller flannel now, Shady. I'm telling you. Starting
awesome.
To get a little fit. You know, going to the gym, doing all the good stuff. You know, I didn't always eat my fruit and vegetables, and I figured, hey, you know, this is a good way to do it. Fieldofgreens.com, use code MG Show, please, if you can. It will help you get ready for the holidays and get ready for, you know, your New Year's resolution, hopefully. You'll join me by working out, going to the gym, doing at least 30 minutes of cardio, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. Start slow, start off the way you want to get. But I'm telling you, I'm feeling better already. And it gives me a lot of energy so I can do this show every day. Shady Groove, fieldofgreens.com.
You're cool. Awesome. Thank you guys so much. And definitely, I really like the product as well. As a matter of fact, I'm taking it as a supplement every morning myself. And I like the product too. So definitely. Please try out fieldofgreens.com, code MG Show. And guys, guess what? You know, you start to take this stuff and then you start to feel better and then you can fight more efficiently for America and all the other patriots out there.
You know, and you can get the energy to go. The hardest thing to go into the gym is getting through that front door. And this,
yes,
fieldofgreens.com, use code MG Show, is helping me get there. I'm not even taking my afternoon naps anymore. JD, I'm raring to go, guys. So thank you guys very much. Fieldofgreens.com, use code MG Show. We love it. Also donate, this MG.show/donate. You know, we're in a heck of a battle over there on Truth Social. Don't really want it to bleed into the show, but there's a lot that has been dropped And I'm telling you right now that, you know, I'll lose every follower to expose the truth. I'll lose every view to expose the truth. And the truth is not looking good for the people that have fooled you over the last 16 months. Somebody comes off the, you know, out of nowhere, and all of a sudden I'm fighting with them for a crappy theory. I'm just telling you guys, you know, go look at the_authority. If you want to see the drops, they've been released. I had nothing to do with it. But I have nothing to hide. You can go read it all. Shady Groove. But we're not funded by Lucifizer. We're funded by you. And thank you guys very much. And, we're going to roll that beautiful boom footage. Thank you guys very much. Happy Flannel Friday.
Government-induced inflation, taxes, rising interest rates, and political instability. They all have a crushing effect on our investments, often causing the stock market to go down. They can also cause gold and silver to go up. There's a time to be in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, and there's a time to get out. This is the time to hold gold and silver. Kirk Elliott, double PhD, has been protecting individual Americans' assets for more than two decades.
Hi, I'm Kirk Elliott. There is no such thing as a bad investment. There is only bad timing for investments. And now is the time to own gold and silver.
Now is the time to own physical metals in an IRA, a 401k, and of course outside of a retirement plan. Don't let the government destroy your hard-earned assets. Please call 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900 for gold, silver, and undeniable economic protection against out-of-control government.
Support the guys and mention MG's show when you call.
The Brighteon store understands the importance of getting all the nutrients you need to support the healthy functions of your body. Our nutrient-dense superfoods and supplements can help nourish your body and promote your optimal health and well-being. 100% customer satisfaction guarantee on all purchases. You deserve the best. BrighteonStore.com. Support this amazing platform and amazing Patriots for Humanity.
Use promo code MGSHOW at checkout for additional savings.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm excited to bring you my biggest bedding sale ever, just in time for Christmas. Get my Giza Dream bed sheets for as low as $29.98. A set of pillowcases, only $9.98. Rejuvenate your bed with a MyPillow mattress topper for as low as $99.99. We also have blankets in a variety of sizes, colors, and styles. We even have blankets for your pets. Get duvets, quilts, down comforters, body pillows, bolster pillows, and so much more, all at the biggest discounts ever. I know my bedding products are perfect for you, and I'm extending my money-back guarantee for Christmas until March 1st, 2023, making them the perfect gifts for your friends, your family, and everyone you know. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code, and you'll get huge discounts on all MyPillow bedding products, including my Giza Dream bed sheets, for as low as $29.98. Get all your shopping done now while quantities last.
And welcome back to the MG Show, where we are getting fit and ready to go for the holiday season. Thank you guys very much for joining. Fieldofgreens.com. Use code MG Show so they know you bought it from us. Buy it today because they are the official sponsor for the show. And we also have Mike Lindell, www.mypillow.com/MG Show is the landing page, or anywhere on mypillow.com. Use code MG Show. And that number is 800-873-0478. 800-873-0478. 7-8 Welcome back. He did, guys. I tell you, you know, we are, I tell you, Finn, he's credible. I'm gonna tell you that right now, Finn. You see your comment in there, you know. So, you know, what was released yesterday were the full chat logs. You know, I was lied about in a Substack, and the record is now set straight if you read them. So, credible that. So stupid. Yeah. The bottom line is our movement was rebranded, repackaged, and taken over by something that rhymes with prostitution. And if you're part of that, then you can unfollow me now because I don't care. I stand with Q. Shady Groove. No,
because somebody said I was muted. How about now?
No.
Now he says I'm unmuted. No, you can talk. Yeah, but I caught it. Some Eddie Mike helped me before I went there. That was pretty good.
All right. So let's go through this because, you know, this is very amazing. And there's some things that Trump said yesterday that we're going to kind of focus on a little bit. And we're going to talk about Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake has her opponent, the governor-elect Katie Hobbs. There is a court date today where Katie Hobbs is saying we need to throw out this court case and it'll be streamed. We're going to try to get it in about 15 minutes or so. But wow, guys. Wow. All right. So check this out. This is from yesterday. This is a great graphic, folks. This is Trump. This is decisive leadership from day one. This is who and what I voted for twice. Ban federal agencies from colluding to censor Americans. Ban taxpayer dollars from being used to label speech as mis or disinformation. Huh. I don't want my own tax dollars to take away my constitutional right. Do you?
No.
Fire every federal bureaucrat who has engaged in domestic censorship. Right, yes. Adam Schiff? Ah. Stop. Federal funding from all nonprofits and academic programs that engage in censorship. Right, Media Matters? Bell Advisors?
All, yep.
All you foreign billionaires? Send federal dollars to any university that is engaged in censorship support activities. I teach my kids to college. I send her to college to undo it.
Yeah. Good plan.
Yeah. Order the DOJ to investigate all parties involved in online censorship regime and prosecute any and all crimes identified. Oh, you mean an actual DNA or DOJ? How do you shady? Can we real equal justice under the law? Both parties, not a one-sided. That would be nice. Wouldn't
wonderful.
It?
Yes, it would.
I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Cozy. If you participated in online censorship, Republican or Democrat, independent, I don't care what you want to call yourself. Investigate all parties involved.
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of Republicans that find their way in that category as we go forward.
Revise Section 230 to drastically curtail big platforms' power to restrict lawful speech. Yeah, Rumble.
Internet Bill of Rights?
Enact criminal penalties for our federal bureaucrats who partner with private entities to violate your constitutional rights. Impose a 7-year cooling off period before former Intel and national security officials can work at big tech. Right, Andy McCabe? Right, Brandon?
James Baker? Baker.
Thank you, Baker. Send preservation letters to Biden administration and big tech giants immediately, guys. Pass a digital bill of rights.
And that's actually something that you can do, as a matter of fact. He said that yesterday. He wanted you guys to call your representatives and make sure that they are implementing these preservation letters around the country. That is definitely something that you guys can do. Put pressure on your representatives to tell them that you're thinking about it and that you're concerned about it and that they need to make forward motion to prevent them from being able to destroy evidence, because you know these companies, they're just like the people at the that run the elections, Jeff. They'll get rid of evidence in a second if you give them an opportunity.
That's right. That's right. So Finn got his contract from NADLANDS. All right. So here we go. So this is interesting, guys. You know, Sam Bankman-Fried, had a special prison visit from Hillary and Maxine. Check it out.
What the
Are you guys here to bail me out?
Not exactly.
Yeah, not exactly.
Make sure these cameras are working.
So you're not here to bail me out?
No, Sam. We're not gonna bail you out.
You ain't going nowhere. So if you're not here to bail me out, then what are you? Oh.
Yep.
Hillary, Maxine. I swear I won't talk. I promise.
Oh, I know you're not gonna talk, Sam.
You ain't gonna say nothing to no one no more.
Oh, would you look at that?
What's wrong, Nancy?
Well, the cameras, they aren't working.
That's weird.
That is weird. Same thing happened in my house.
It happened in Jeffrey's cell, too!
Must be some kind of a coincidence.
Oh, yeah! It's a coincidence for sure!
Please, guys, don't do this!
Hey, what's going on out there? What's with all the noise?
Go back to sleep, Michael! I'll be with you in a minute!
Have I been elected president yet?
Does anyone need a donation?
Everybody shut up!
Hey, tell Stormy I said hi.
Hey, can I go back to the Bahamas now?
Sure!
Yeah, really?
Yeah, as soon as you sign this, you can go wherever you want!
What is it?
It's your goodbye letter!
What?
Goodbye, Sam!
See you later, buddy.
God!
Tell Jeffrey I said no hard feelings!
Somebody help!
Farewell, old friend!
Hey, Maxine, are you gonna grab his wallet?
Of course I'm gonna grab his wallet! You act like I ain't never grabbed a wallet
before! I was only asking!
This ain't my first barbecue!
That's the United Spot. At United Spot on True Social, Devin Nunez actually retruthed that yesterday, so or today, and I was just like, "Oh my God, that is great!
Is so good. Everything they do is really good. I mean, you can't put any better language to that than right there. That's exactly what's going on."
Yeah, and then did you know that because the NFTs, I think Joe Biden wanted to get on the action. Apparently, those sold out in 12 hours. Guys, 45,000 NFTs, $45 million in 12 hours.
Nick, that's pretty good fundraising technique there.
That's good. That's good. And, yeah. Might they use the blockchain for D-Class? Well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. No? You just embed the D-Class into the blockchain. Boy, that sure would trigger some globalist leaders out there.
So let me just do one more about the Joe Biden trader cards. Trading cards.
Trader cards.
See what I did there? Check it
Mark
out.
Brand.
Ah, I'm Joe Biden. Your favorite president. The guy who got more votes than Obama. The president that's better than Washington, Lincoln, Reagan, and Trump put together. The guy who raised gas prices, inflation, and minimum wage. The man responsible for emptying grocery store shelves and keeping that border wide open. The dictator who single-handedly laundered more money. And Scrooge McDuck has got a major announcement just for you. For a limited time only. America will finally be able to see all of my accomplishments. That's right. For the first time in American history, I'm doing something that no one has ever done before. I'm selling trader cards. And for the low, low price of $100 each, you can have one of my amazing collectible trader cards for only 5 payments of just $1,400. That's cheaper than the 2020 election. But wait, that's not all. For just a measly extra $400, you can get 3 of my trader cards absolutely free. With only 4 payments of just $600. That's a 25-cent value for only $1,700. And because these babies are coming from China, I'll throw in a booster absolutely free. With only 2 payments of just $600. That's a $14 value for only $1,200. Finally, America will be able to hold all of my accomplishments in the palm of their hands. Get one before they're all gone. Trade them with friends. Or sell them to other countries for $500,000 apiece. With my new Joe Biden trader cards, the sky's the limit. Get yours today.
Trader card. I love it. Did you see the engine light? The engine light came on.
The engine light's on. I was like, what's on his head? And I could see it's like the engine light lit up.
Oh my God. So again, at the United Spot on True Social. Give them a follow, man. I'm telling you, it's awesome. So we're going to be looking at, let me see. Let's just check this out. There's no link yet. Control F. Let's look for this. Control F. Let's look for Hobbs. Hobbs. There she is. Live streaming. Ooh, where did it go? Hobbs. Let's go check it out. Let's go see what we got. And we're going to keep an eye on this.
Yeah, just get it. Monitoring. Monitor.
Yep. We're monitoring. Because Katie Hobbs is a loser. All right, so I got that.
We
got, it is actually live streaming now. We will listen, monitor. We will monitor that, Shady Groove, for all you guys out there. I wanted to actually just jump into this because there was some great stuff about... Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, geez, there's so much going on right now. This is good. This was Ben Berquam talking about Katie Hobbs's... case. Check it
Tell
out.
Us the very latest. So it appears at least hearing what we've heard right now, based on this judge's decision, to be somewhat of a win for Lake. Tell us more about this specific lawsuit, if you can, and what we can expect next with this later order by the judge. Again, you're heading out to Arizona.
Yeah, I was actually on the hearing listening in yesterday or watching yesterday. And so just to give everyone an update, the motion to dismiss, which all three defendants will probably be filing or have filed, was ordered today. So by tomorrow, Thursday. And then ultimately, Carrie Lake will have till Saturday to rebut those dismissal arguments, then at which time the defendants will have till Sunday to answer those rebuttals. And then on Monday, they're expecting oral arguments, and the actual court date, the trial is set for the 21st and 22nd. So it's a very fast process. You could tell the judge, it wasn't like we've seen in many of the past hearings when President Trump, against President Trump in 2020, where judges basically just dismissed the cases outright. There are very legitimate claims. And if you read the lawsuit, I mean, it would be very difficult for anyone just to dismiss what's going on, whether it's the chain of custody, 200,000 plus ballots that were run through Runbeck that may apparently didn't have chain of custody, whether it's the signature verification that was non-existent, or the tabulators that were shut down the day of the election, which disproportionately disenfranchised Republican voters. There are some major, major issues here. And Carrie Lake and her entire team believe they have a major, a winning case. And so it really comes down to this judge. Ultimately, regardless of how it happens in Maricopa, it will probably end up going to the state Supreme Court. And then it could ultimately go to the Supreme Court. So, depending on which way it falls in each one of these courts, more than likely, whoever the winner is, the loser will end up appealing it to the next level.
Yep. Yeah, it's right. So right now, today, we're waiting on Katie Hobbs, Shady Groove, Shady. We were waiting for to come in and talk about dismissing the case today, Shady.
Yeah, that's really what she wants. She wants this case dismissed. She wants it put under the rug. She wants all of you to shut up and go back to what you were doing before you realized that she was cheating. That's what she would prefer. And that's what she's angling for.
And she wants us to watch this short clip. And we've had Tom Renz on the program. This was very well done by Tom Renz.
Most credible case, in my opinion, that's ever been filed on an election suit. Can you imagine an elected official interfering with an election? You don't hide things unless you've got something to hide. Election liars are working really hard in Arizona right now. 59% of the machines in Maricopa County went down on election day. 59%. That didn't happen anywhere else in the state. The guy running those machines, the county recorder, had a PAC that was working to make sure that Carrie Lake couldn't get elected. Coincidence? I think there should be an investigation. And guess what? He should welcome that investigation of everything. He should welcome that to disprove us crazy election deniers, right? The person he was supporting, Katie Hobbs, abused her power as Secretary of State to ensure that Carrie Lake would be censored by social media. She should have recused herself. Do you know what else she did? Other counties in the great state of Arizona were saying, no, we don't want to certify this. She threatened to arrest the officials. She doesn't have the authority to do that, but she did it anyways. Why? Because she's a crook. We had a civil rights movement where we fought to ensure that every vote would count and that everybody would have a vote. We need to make sure that that's still happening. We have to fight for freedom. We have to fight for justice. We have to fight for fair elections. The court's got to give it serious, serious consideration. They've got to support this. The people got to support this. We've got to get this out. We really need to make sure people know what's going on.
Boom. That was very well done by Tom Renz, JD.
We need to get Tom back over here for a minute, get a little update from him. We haven't spoken to Tom in, I mean, it's what, 6 or 8 months now since we had him over. I'd like to know what's going on with him lately, but he is, you know, he's on fire out there working 24/7 for all of you guys in America.
Yep, absolutely. And let's get him out there. You know, I've got his number. I'll text him right after the show. Wow.
Yeah. Patriots are coming together, Jeff, you know, and they're helping each other too. You know, they're utilizing their skills to plug into where it applies. You know, I know that Greg Phillips has been on the ground there doing a lot of help out in Arizona. And really, if we can get this can of worms opened up in the right way and the rest of the country to see it, it's going to be a cascading event, I think, as far as people's just innate trust in elections in general, which will drive the narrative a little bit towards what Donald Trump is saying. You know, he didn't really say that he was going to be attacking election integrity, but trust me, he will be.
Yeah, he better. This is something, there was a little movement here. We are watching the Katie Hobbs live stream right now. I can make that bigger once something happens. We're waiting on Katie Hobbs and her Mark Elias lawyer, Shady.
She's got a lot of the Mark Elias Arabella regime is in play.
Yeah. And last night, Twitter suspended several reporters who covered Elon Musk in Thursday night massacre. Can you say re?
Q Elon. That's what I'm hearing.
Elon Musk. Q-Elon. Yeah. Wow. So I'm telling you guys, this is pretty. Oh, and by the way, guys, bad news for your kids. Santa tracker was suspended.
What?
Yep. Just
okay.
Maybe he just being doxxed. I don't know what's going on.
Maybe he was like, you know, getting. Never mind. I'm not doing that.
I don't even want to know.
That's not sure. Growing up.
It was interesting. You got to see this. This is great. You know, Kamala Harris is actually, you know, a fabulous speaker. And they did an interview with a speech writer. Let's check it out.
Hi, I'm Oliver Bacon, and I'm 16 and a half years old, and I'm the speechwriter for Kamala Harris. My mommy and daddy say, if you find a job you love, you'll never have to work a day in your life. Morning, Frank.
Yeah, hey, Oliver.
And my parents were right. Ever since I was little, I liked words. Writing words is fun, so I made writing words my job. Every politics person has a writer, like me, to make good words for them to say.
Space is exciting. Space, it affects us all. And it connects us all.
Got that idea when I was thinking about space and how big it is. Man, it's big. It's not all fun, though. Sometimes I have to write about bad stuff, like war.
Ukraine is a country in Europe. It exists next to another country called Russia. Russia is a bigger country. Russia is a powerful country. Russia decided to invade a smaller country called Ukraine. So, basically, that's wrong.
It's cool to see the words I typed in actually get set on TV. It's fun. I like it. Once I thought it would be neat if Kamala wore a blue suit and told people she was
wearing. Okay, good morning. We are on the record in CB 2022-053927 in the matter of Mark Fincham versus Adrian Fontes and Katie Hobbs. Can counsel for the parties please announce their appearances, beginning with plaintiff's counsel?
This is Dan McCauley, Your Honor, for Mark Fincham.
Morning, Your Honor. Craig Morgan for Sherman and Howard on behalf of Secretary-elect Avantes.
Good morning, Your Honor. Andy Gaona with Coppersmith Brockelman and Bo Duell with States United Democracy Center on behalf of Secretary of State Katie Hobbs.
Check! All right. Did I say that?
Okay. Welcome, counsel. We're here for an oral argument on the two pending motions to dismiss. I've received and reviewed all of the briefing filed by the parties, as well as the record and the original statement of contest and the verified amended statement of contest and the exhibits attached thereto, as well as all the cases cited by all the parties. So what we'll do, have this set for an hour. What I'm going to do is I'm going to allow each side to have half of that time, 30 minutes, although I will give you leeway. We don't have anything else set. We cleared the afternoon. So if we need to go past an hour, we can certainly do that so that everyone has a chance to say what they need to say in support of their respective positions. I don't know which of the defendants wants to start.
Mr. Gaona, I think you wanted to start.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Morgan and I had conferred, and if it's okay with the court, the secretary would like to go first.
That's fine. So I'll, because this is your both of your motions, I will let you go first. I'll then hear from you, Mr. McCauley, and defense counsel will then have an opportunity for a rebuttal. One of the things I wanted to explain, because I know in this virtual setting, it looks strange sometimes. I have another screen that I take notes on during the oral argument. So sometimes you might see me looking to the side. It's because I'm not paying attention. It's because I want to make sure that I can take detailed notes during the hearing, and I type a lot faster than I write, so that's the way I do it. Okay, Iona, you can begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. And good morning again, and thank you for setting this on such an expedited basis. The Secretary appreciates it. I will be very brief today in my argument, Your Honor, because the party's papers largely speak for themselves and demonstrate conclusively that this baseless election contest should be dismissed.
Cack.
Plaintiff was the Republican nominee for Secretary of State and thus sought the position as Arizona's chief elections officer. That's a serious job, one that requires understanding and following the laws prescribed by the legislature for how elections are to be run. But the fact of the matter is that Arizonans chose someone else for that job, specifically Secretary-elect Fontes, by more than 120,000 votes. And although the legislature has given electors a carefully circumscribed path to follow to contest an election after the fact, plaintiff's contest of Secretary-elect Fontes' election is wholly deficient and should proceed no further. As noted in the papers, Your Honor, plaintiff's claims fall into two large buckets, and I'll just mention each of them briefly. First, plaintiff claims that there was either misconduct or that illegal votes were cast based on a widely circulated conspiracy theory that certain vote tabulation machines in Arizona are not properly certified under Arizona and federal law. Not only should plaintiff have brought this claim well before the election and well before the machines at issue tabulated the votes of millions of Arizonans, but it's also meritless according to the Election Assistance Commission itself. These machines are properly certified as established by public records that we've provided the court with.
Not the record I saw.
Referenced in the Secretary's motion to dismiss.
And that was one question I had. So the argument is that it's appropriate for the court to view those additional materials appended or cited to on the website because they are public records from the Election Assistance Commission, and so reliance on those records doesn't convert the motion or require the motion to be heard via an evidentiary hearing.
Now remember, this is Mark Fincham's case.
That's correct, Your Honor. They are all public records of which the court can take judicial notice. And Your Honor, even if none of that were true, that is, even if it brought these claims in a timely fashion, which he didn't, even if those claims had merit, which they don't, plaintiff does not and cannot allege that the machines at issue had any impact whatsoever on the results of the 2022 general election.
They didn't work.
So for all of those reasons, plaintiff's claims about machine certification.
Only 59% of them.
Second, Your Honor, plaintiff alleges that the secretary engaged in misconduct in three ways. By number one, by not recusing herself from her constitutional and statutory duties. Check. When no statute required her to do so. Number two, for taking appropriate action to compel other elections officials to comply with their own such duties. And number three, by flagging election misinformation on social media to a private entity.
Tyrant.
Misconduct under any common understanding of that term. To say nothing of actionable misconduct under the election contest statutes.
How can Andy
and the rich
sleep
body
at night?
Case law that we've cited to the court that discussed misconduct. The suggestion that any of this constitutes misconduct is meritless and, as we previewed for the court before, sanctionable.
Kind of looks like the Alex Kaplan guy.
If there's any questions, the secretary rests largely on her papers and requests that the court end this political sideshow, immediately dismiss this action with prejudice, and send a strong message to plaintiff and future litigants like him that the judiciary is not the appropriate venue to air political grievances and conspiracy theories. Cases
Heck.
Like this do not, but so
Where
needless
else are we going to air it?
And the debt.
Uh-oh, the network failed.
Rock. Pull the plug, Katie, pull the plug.
Pull the plug.
Here we go.
You working?
Thank you, Your Honor. Craig Morgan for the record. Just to follow up, Your Honor, on what Mr. Gaona said a moment ago, you mentioned the references in Mr. Gaona's briefs. I would also note, Judge, that in addition to being public records, I think they're appropriately considered because they're central to the plaintiff's claims. And as you know, there's case law that makes it pretty clear that in the context of a motion to dismiss, if a complaint references issues or matters outside the pleadings that are central to the claims, then those issues or matters are fairly raised outside the pleadings in a response. And I think this is that appropriate situation to invoke that doctrine through case law. Obviously, before I start, Judge, I want to make sure there aren't any specific questions you want me to answer before I get into a couple things that I think are key here.
No, why don't you make your argument? I prefer to listen and then kind of I'll jump in.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. To echo Mr. Gaona's thanks, I want to thank you and your staff for handling this on an expedited basis. I know it's difficult. It's no easy feat. And I want to thank you, and again, particularly your staff. Your Honor, the key thing here is this case is about trying to undo millions of votes. That's what they seek here. They want to stop the will of the people from being effectuated. And the problem with that, in addition to everything Mr. Gaona very eloquently stated, is that there's absolutely no legal or factual basis asserted by which to do so. They have failed to state with any reasonable particularity at all how anything that happened that they alleged could have affected the outcome of the election. And their mere conclusory statements in the complaint aren't enough. They'll never be enough. This case should not proceed beyond the pleadings. Number two, and I think it's key, and I raised this argument in my brief, you cannot file an election contest and ask a court to conduct an entirely new special election without naming every county and its election department, period. And they didn't do that. And that's fatal to this court's jurisdiction. And they can't fix it after the fact, because there's no way those parties, or those non-parties, I should say, aren't indispensable here. The counties conduct the elections, and they need to be parties in the case.
I did have a question about that, because I saw that discussion, the discussion about indispensable parties in the Williams case that you cited from 2019, I think. But what I was wondering is, does the statute itself, which prescribes what has to be contained and who has to be included in the petition, provide that in any statewide contest that all of the counties who have some duties relating to the canvass have to be named as parties?
I think, Your Honor, the answer is it depends on the relief you're going to seek. I think the statute very clearly at least implies that if you're contesting an election, who are the contestees? Well, if you're saying, I want the relief of a new election because something occurred with respect to an aspect of the election, whoever, whatever you're saying occurred, right, is going to probably dictate who the parties need to be. And here, they can try to hide from this and say, well, we're complaining about Secretary Hobbs. But the problem they've got is they're complaining about, very clearly in the complaint, things that allegedly occurred in Maricopa County, in Cochise County, in all of these precincts. If you look at their exhibits, that's what they're talking about. So I would submit to the court, in the context of this particular case, absolutely, they're indispensable parties. They are contestees in the sense that they're coming to this court and saying there were illegal votes because of something that happened at these places. And it's highly inappropriate to seek an entirely new election under the statute, that remedy, that drastic remedy, and not name the counties and their election officials who run those elections, who handle the canvassing, who are in charge of making sure things are done right on election day. It defies logic that they aren't parties. I do not understand how this case got filed without taking the time to make sure that these indispensable parties are a part of this case. Because clearly, if it moves forward, what happened on election day in these places, at minimum, Maricopa County, are highly relevant. And they've totally ignored that.
Okay, but I think I'm understanding, though, that the indispensability argument arises by virtue of the common law, and not necessarily something that is statutorily prescribed in the contest statute.
I think that while the statute doesn't specifically require you, right, to name anybody other than you got to name a contestant, right? And I think here in connection with the context of this case, I do think that the statute would require you to name those parties, because I don't see the statute allowing. I can't imagine that that the statute could be reasonably read to allow an entire recount and re-election, or not recount, an entire special election around the state without requiring the parties who would be involved in that election to have a seat at the table to discuss whether that should even happen. But you're right too, Judge. There is a common law right as well. It does arise under common law as well. I agree. Notwithstanding, this is a statutory proceeding. Finally, Your Honor, with respect to the certificate issue, the only thing I would stress, and I want to make sure that we've got a clear record of this, they're alleging just procedural irregularities. They say it in their complaint. They call it that in their complaint. If you look in the amended petition, which, by the way, isn't verified, at the end of the day, paragraph 71 through 74 is really where this case, where the rubber hits the road on count two. And what they're saying is that, and when I read this, it astonished me. They're saying the secretary changed the gauge of paper lined across the state. Before making such a substantial change, a certified lab should have tested and certified a material procedural change before the paper substitutions. Their change had a vast effect on the public's voting experience and amount to material misconduct. And then they go on to say that those things could have changed the outcome of the election. Well, the problem is that they're right. If that happened, it is procedural. And procedural issues like that don't give rise to an election contest. And the certificate issue is nothing more than a procedural issue they've known about for years.
Well, I mean, under the case law, procedural irregularities could give rise to an election contest if there is fraud or the irregularities are alleged to have affected the outcome, correct?
I don't think, well, I would agree that with respect to fraud, yes, but they're not alleging fraud. And with respect to irregularities affecting the outcome, yes, but there's no clearly pled allegations of how these specific irregularities could have affected the outcome. You can't just jump from this is what happened, therefore the outcome was affected. You've got to plead more than that. And I don't think they've met their burden of even pleading remotely that anything that occurred here has somehow affected the outcome of the election, because they can't. With that, Your Honor, I ask the court to dismiss this case with prejudice and give serious consideration to either sanctioning the parties for bringing what amounts to a frivolous political lawsuit, or at least setting a briefing schedule so that we can brief the issue, because I do think this court needs to take a stand and remind all counsel and litigants alike that there are standards for filing a lawsuit, and you have to meet them. And they aren't hard to meet, but you haven't met them here. And this is just one of a series of meritless lawsuits that continue to perpetuate divisive and, frankly, harmful rhetoric, and we just need to stop. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Mr. McCauley, I can't see you, but I see your name on the list.
Yeah, Judge, I had a difficult time even getting in so that you could hear me. I was repeatedly trying to make entry, and I finally had to call your clerk, and we got it straightened out to the point where at least I can participate more or less by phone.
Okay, and that's fine, and I can hear you just fine.
Well, Judge, I would say, first of all, that, to my knowledge, Mr. Fincham verified his complaint, his testimony, and we have no answer here. The statute clearly calls for an answer. Title 16 demands an initial contest, an answer, and a hearing. There's no provision for motion practice, and that's the governing statute. Now, when you try to apply the civil rules,
okay.
To that,
and sorry to interrupt, but what do you have to say then to the 2013 Court of Appeals decision in Pruch versus Town of Quartzsite, which held that a motion to dismiss is a responsive pleading for an election contest, and that the failure to file an answer in addition to a motion to dismiss doesn't give rise to a default?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the facts and circumstances may, appear to be a little bit different, but let's not even get into that. I don't believe, as we researched it, we could find any case that really argued that this procedure set under the title is a separate animal from any civil action. Civil actions are defined in the rules, and this is not a civil action. It's not related to a civil action. It's a wholly different animal governed strictly by this statute.
Okay, but what about the language of Rule 1 itself, which doesn't just apply to civil actions? It applies the rules to proceedings in the Superior Court. Would you agree that this is a proceeding in the Superior Court?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because when the legislature drew this up, the civil rules were available. If they wanted this to be any form of civil proceeding, they would have allowed for that. They were very direct and limited. They wanted a speedy, quick resolution. Motion practice is not contemplated under the title, and motion practice shouldn't be accepted. And just, you know, if other lawyers in prior cases didn't render that defense, then I think a court can honor a motion for summary or a motion to dismiss. But this, in this case, this motion to dismiss is just a cover. First of all, there's no statutory authority cited there that's related to the rules. So the rules don't apply to this because they didn't cite them. And second, Your Honor, this is a disguised motion for judgment on the pleadings. And Griffin v. Buzzard, which is the fundamental case from 1959, 86 Arizona 166, quoted, the door must be closed to hearing charges related to deception or fraud. And misbehavior is a deception, Your Honor. And further,
but Mr. McCauley, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay, Judge. I can continue. Go ahead.
Well, I've read Griffin, and the at least as to this issue of the application of Rules 8 and 12b-6, Griffin was an appeal from a dismissal pursuant to Rule 12b-6, and although Griffin did reverse the dismissal, it analyzed the validity of that order under the standard employed for Rule 12b-6 motions and Rule 8 for pleadings. It applied the civil rules in evaluating that case. So the case itself stands for the proposition that Rule 12b-6 does apply to election contests, doesn't it?
And I respectfully disagree, Judge, because in that case I saw nothing. No attorney was citing to the Title 16. And a court responds to what the attorneys present to it. If Title 16 and the rules related to thereto and the specificity of those rules had been argued in that case, and I don't think I overlooked that, I might have to agree with you. But since it wasn't raised, and to my knowledge, this is the first time it's being raised, it needs to be honored as the intent of the legislature. I mean, the legislature set forth the statutes, titrated them down to a very quick, they didn't want this. Look what's happened here. I've spent so much time with these motions that I can't prepare the case. And that's exactly what they wanted to avoid. And this, I believe, these motions are being deliberately done, put forward specifically to deny me the title to prepare time to prepare the case. It's a critical issue, and I think it's up to you to make a decision on that. I mean, I think that you should rule for us, but we'll see how that turns out, because according to Griffin, which. We're all citing here, contestants are entitled to prove their charges. The Supreme Court wants litigants like this to be able to present their case and not have it shortstopped. That's how I interpret the case, and they make that statement right in there at page 173.
Okay, but then how do I reconcile your argument with the more recent Arizona Supreme Court cases affirming?
We will be right back. Brighteon.tv, we're going to keep continuing to listen to this. We're going to go through the commercials and everything on rumble.com/MG show. This is very important. This is Mark Fincham's case. They're trying to throw it out. They're trying not to get discovery. They're just basically politicizing a case, and hopefully that he will be on the winning side. www.rumble.com/MG Show. Come check us out now.
Affirming 12B6 dismissals, like Burke versus Ducey from 2021.
Because they didn't address the statute, to my knowledge, Your Honor. They're going on the civil rules, and that's an entirely different animal. If the legislature wanted the civil rules to apply to Title 16 actions, they would have included it. They were very specific, and there's no room for motion practice in that statute. That's my contention, Your Honor.
Okay. Sorry for all the interruptions. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay, Judge. And, you know, we're not trying to overturn millions of voters, Judge. We're not asking for the entire election to be redone. This is a contest between two persons, I guess is the best word, who are vying for the same office. Now, Georgia had a special runoff for two men running for the Senate in Georgia. And it was done very quickly, in just a couple of days. It reached a result, and we're not asking the state of Arizona to go to great expense and remanage a major election across the state. We're asking for a revote on the specific contest that you know, unjustly enriched Mr. Fontes as we perceive it. And you know, there's other problems here. I mean, there's no answer. Therefore, there's no testimony. There's nothing really backing up anything these attorneys are saying. There's no memorandum. It's not authorized under 16635, which requires a contest and requires an answer. The Griffin case requires an answer. They're trying to twist the motion to dismiss, as I said, to judgment on the pleadings. But they don't cite any statutory authority. They want to depend on the civil rules, but they don't cite one. So what we're doing here is we're picking and choosing what rule we want. And why don't I get discovery? Why don't I get a Rule 26 statement of disclosure? Because all that's time consuming, and the legislature didn't want that. It's pointed and direct. It's one of the most pointed and direct statutes that I've seen in my 30 or 40 years as a lawyer.
Well, would you agree, though, that nothing in the statute says that the civil rules don't apply and that motion practice is prohibited? There's nothing in the statute that says that, correct?
Well, Judge, it's really not what this statute says in those terms. It's really about what the statute defined as the proceeding here. And they clearly defined it, and it's unequivocal. And, you know, I mean, the parties on the other side may come up with some arguments about it, but I just keep reiterating, if the legislature, and this, my understanding from our research is that this was a bipartisan decision. So it was probably, to our knowledge, if you're going to get bipartisan, there's a lot of negotiation and a lot of argument. I don't want to go back and have to research all the, you know, history of that. But when you get an agreement like this from a legislative body that's got at least two different parties, and they're this specific, and the civil rules existed, and they chose not to insert them in here, that was deliberate and intentional. And the justification from my point of view is the fact that this is a separate animal. It's clearly defined. It's in Title 16. It has nothing to do with civil actions at all, or anything related to a civil action. It's a contest. It's a contest. It's not a complaint. These people are not defendants. It's an entirely different approach, and the parties are not identified in any way as a defendant would be under the civil rules. There's no, the civil rules on Rule 7, they clearly define what a pleading is and what the rules govern. And this contest is not in that rule. So the rules itself state that this sort of litigation is not subject to the rules. You have a complaint, you have an answer, you have, it's all enumerated in there. If this legislature wanted this kind of a contest in the civil rules, they would have modified them, and they didn't. So it stands to reason that this action is totally and should be conducted totally and separately along the architecture laid out in Title 16. Otherwise, the rules themselves would state that, you know, these contests and the notices of contests would be a pleading. The rules handle pleadings. It states it clearly.
Okay, but what about the Supreme Court's decision in Hancock versus Biznar, which evaluated an election contest's allegations based upon notice pleading standards set forth under Rule 8?
I think
that was a 2006 case.
Yeah, I understand that, Judge, but I have to go back to the point that the appellate courts and the courts in general are going to respond to what's presented to them. If it's never been presented to them in the fashion I'm presenting it to you, then they're not going to, they're going to go by the civil rules. If everybody says, oh yeah, the civil rules are great, let's use them, then that's what the court's going to do. However, when a litigant comes forward and says, wait a minute, the rules, the civil rules and Title 16 are clear and unequivocal. The civil rules do not envision this action as they describe appropriate pleadings in the rules. And Title 16, does not include the civil rules in its architecture either.
Okay, so it's not an unequivocal statement. It's something that you're inferring from the lack of the express incorporation of the civil rules into the election contest statutory scheme.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I mean,
okay. Then show me in the statute where it excludes the application of any civil rule of procedure in an election proceeding. Where in the statute would I find that?
Well, you won't find that, Your Honor. What you will find is it's not included. And that's the point. The point is that they didn't say that the statute didn't go to great lengths in detail. I mean, imagine hammering the statute out took a lot of work. And the result is not that maybe since it's silent, we can include these. I disagree with that respectfully. What it says is it's not in the statute. It's been well negotiated. We passed it bipartisanly, and it's not to include that because it's not in there. And that's, I guess we're continuing on making a circular argument. I keep going around, but I hope I'm making myself clear.
One of the other questions on the merits that I had for you was you didn't really address the latches argument that was raised in the secretary's motion. And there is a long line of cases applying the latches doctrine in the context of election contests. So I was wondering if you could address that issue in particular.
Well, I will now address it. But I think that they're setting litigants up for an either or. In other words, my understanding, and I could get you the cite, is that Ms. Lake filed a motion in the federal district court wherein she said the voting machines would hurt me in the future. The court said that's speculative. You're talking about hurting in the future. You haven't been injured yet. And as a result of that, the case was not only dismissed, she was sanctioned. So if my client comes in early and says, oh, I'm going to be hurt by this, this is what we think is going to happen, and presents a speculative argument, he's out. Now they want to say, because he didn't do that, he's still out after he's been injured. And my understanding of the law after, you know, when we were all lawyers, we've been in this a long time. My understanding is, in order to succeed, you have to have a palpable injury. You can't have a speculative injury. And my client's injury is palpable now. So it's inappropriate to say latches apply. I mean, you could, it's just a setup, I think. And it just takes more, attention off the misbehavior here. And there's significant misbehavior. I think my client disclosed to the public yesterday that we want to file a motion for summary judgment here. I mean, this is a serious issue. We're waiting to see what decision you make.
Aren't you arguing that the motion, that the civil rules don't apply? So how, if you're correct, how could you file a motion for summary judgment?
Because you're going to rule on the civil rules, Judge, and that, without waiving my argument, I believe I can respond to a decision made on the civil rules.
You are listening to the Mark Fincham case.
Rules in that regard, I'm still trying to dismiss it. Right up front in the motion for summary judgment that we're not waiving any right. We're just comporting with the court's stance on this. Are there any other questions I can answer for you, Judge? I'm a lawyer.
I do have questions, but I also don't want to interrupt you. So I'll if you want to, there are things that you want to address. I'll save the rest of my questions for the end.
Well, Judge, about indispensable parties. There aren't any indispensable parties here. This is a claim specifically made. Well, we had to include the contestee, Mr. Fontes, because the statute required it. But the issue is really solely with the acts or failures to act of the Secretary of State. And to bring in every county in Arizona, every county attorney in Arizona, all the notice provisions, all the people who might want to speak here, the speed and rapidity of the Title 16 architecture would be squandered. I mean, I have no idea if we make these people necessary parties, i.e. defendants, how many of them are going to come forward. And I don't think it's needed because their behavior and what happened in the election has nothing to do with this. This claim has to do with there's expert testimony, whether we're going to have some motion to have the expert out or not. There's expert testimony in the exhibits that says that these machines were not certified. And the expert who's been in the business for 16 or 18 years says if they were certified, they wouldn't have had these problems. And there's a number of certifications because the certification calls for ballpoint pens. And they were using felt markers. The machine can't read them.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I just want to kind of back up a little bit because in looking at the expert statement, the argument seemed to me to be focused on the fact that the signatures from these accreditation signatures, that the executive director of the Election Assistance Commission signed them instead of the chair of the commission. And that is the defect that you are alleging renders all of the votes cast and counted through the tabulation machines illegal. Am I understanding your argument?
What we're saying, Judge, is that when you look at the certificate, the statute is specific, and the Secretary of State knows it's specific, and it requires a certain officer to execute it, or it is invalid.
But is it really the statute? Is it really the statute, either HAVA or state law, that references the chair of the EAC signing the certificate, or is that premise coming from the manual?
No, Judge. This comes from the statutes. The companies that certify have to be recertified every 2 years. So the labs have to be recertified And then the labs have to recertify the machines every 2 years.
And I understand the statute requires certification and recertification. My question, though, is you are arguing that there was a statutory requirement that the chair of the EAC sign the certificate of accreditation, and that accreditation is invalid if the chair didn't sign the certificate. And what I'm wondering is, I didn't see any reference in the statute, either in HAVA or in the state statute, that requires the signature on the certificate in order to be by the chair of the EAC in order for the accreditation itself to be valid. I'm wondering, I saw the reference in the voting manual, the program manual, but what I'm wondering is, are you saying there's another reference in a regulation or a statute that I didn't see? Or is that the source?
What I'm saying to you, and what the expert says, is the date's also off on that, and that he believes the document is a forgery made to fool the public, and that company was not properly certified and was in no position to certify those machines as a result of that. And this went over a number of years.
How do you address the fact that the EAC itself has confirmed that these two companies are in fact accredited, that they have always been accredited, and that their accreditation has not been revoked? I mean, the EAC is the one responsible for accreditation. It is coming out saying these companies are accredited. How do you then say that there's no accreditation? I'm struggling with that.
Well, I'm having trouble myself, Judge, since I don't have copies of that. So I don't have those documents to refer to and haven't had them. Otherwise, I've gone to the expert and gotten an answer.
Well, they're cited. I don't know whose phone is ringing. It's not mine.
I think it might be my iPad, Judge, and I'm sorry about that. I just can't do anything about it or I'll lose you.
That's okay.
Not from my perspective, Judge. I mean, I think it's over.
Okay. So I guess my question, well, you're saying you don't have access to them, but they were cited to and links provided to the EAC's records in the motion to dismiss, particularly in the secretary's motion. So did you not have a chance to look at those?
No, I didn't have a chance. We didn't see them, Judge, with all... I mean, we're
okay. Fair enough.
Essentially alone here. But be that as it may, it's not the EAC that has to do this. They have nothing to do with this. The person who has to validate all this is the Secretary of State. It's her primary job. She's to run these elections. She can't depend on somebody, some other entity that's not under her control. She has to validate what they said. That's her responsibility. And this gets more serious. For the second highest officer in the state of Arizona to go to a public platform and tell that platform, speaking for the state of Arizona, the government, that the government wants her own constituents censored, that's a major issue. There's really serious issues that have to be addressed, and getting out on a technicality is not helping, you know, the citizens of our state. We need a resolution. Pardon my friend.
Okay, and I think I just...
A lot of pain, Judge, and I'm just, you know, I don't mean to be loud or abrupt.
That's okay. I appreciate zealous and vigorous argument. So I think you're moving to the issue of the Twitter suspension. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, Judge. I'm talking about the Twitter suspension, and I'm talking about, you know, a number of other things that we presented. There's three claims we presented, and we're going to, you know, if you don't dismiss this case, we're going to summary judgment those claims.
And okay, so why don't we talk about those claims then? And I'll try not to interrupt, but I would like to hear you out on the merits of those claims.
Well, Judge, let's continue with the Twitter situation. Those are public Those are corporate records that have been, so they're business records that have been released by the new owner. And those business records, as the evidence, for want of a better term, that's out there, shows clearly that as the Secretary of State, you know, the first officer behind the governor, person who would replace the governor if something happened to him, cajoled the Twitter people into censoring 50, possibly as much as 50% of her constituency. This is a political issue. And she, her defense is that she was trying to eliminate misinformation. What misinformation? Whose definition? What definition is there? I know of no definition in our statutes or in related issues that define misinformation. It's just made up.
Okay. Well, could you explain to me, though, how the communications with Twitter flagging information translates into a basis for challenging the later November election under 16-672A1. What is the argument? How do you get from the Twitter communications to misconduct under the election contest statute?
I get to it, Judge, because Twitter has itself released records, business records, that shows they believed when they took action they were affecting these elections. That's coming right from Twitter. Now, Facebook has also made public disclosures, and I can get those for you if you need to see them, where they say they can turn an election by censoring people and not allowing both sides of an issue to be heard. Only one side is heard. And for people who are independent, we're in the middle, all they're hearing is one story, and they believe, the platforms themselves assert publicly that they believe they can affect an election.
Well, and I understand that criticism. I guess my question is more pointed to the fact that social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook are private actors. So I don't understand, and I believe that there is a list.
The government was telling them to censor people. God, this lady.
It isn't state action when Twitter or Facebook makes a decision to limit information or suspend an account that gives rise to a claim against governmental actors merely because they may have communicated about what they believe to be misinformation circulating
misinformation.
I come back to our election contest statute that requires allegations of misconduct in the canvass. How do these decisions by private entities amount to the secretary's misconduct in the canvass? I'm not sure I can.
Because she requested removal of people.
Well, because, Judge, it's not these platforms making an independent decision. These platforms are directed by a governmental official, and that makes it government. The government of Arizona restricted the speech that affected this election, and the canvass is really, the way we look at the canvass is and address it is under a different theory, a different one of the three foundations for our complaint. And that has to do with, there was information provided to different counties that by who the county believed were experts of one form or another. I can't speak for all these counties. And as a result of that, Mojave County, Cochise County, a number of counties wanted to have a complete recount, which wouldn't have taken long in these counties. And that was immediately resisted. and they were threatened with legal action. And I have two witnesses who are going to come forward if we go to trial, who testify what they experienced. And that sort of interjection of threats of legal prosecution and criminal prosecution, and you're going to have to get a criminal lawyer, are the core of exactly what I think you're trying to, address or get an answer to. It's also a serious charge. It's one thing to deal with these counties in a reasonable fashion as the Secretary of State. It's another thing to threaten and intimidate them. Our government and our government agencies shouldn't be threatening and intimidating. It's citizens or its electors in order to get what they want. It's clear on its face that if who's in charge, this is where we need a decision. Who's really in charge? So we have a Secretary of State with an election manual. And that election manual probably is not effective anymore because the Supreme Court ruled on this in the West Virginia case. It set down that decision in June before we had this. So these government agencies are not permitted to make the rules and regulations that can punish its constituents. The legislature has to do that. That's not what happened here. This was a manual. It was 2019. It was from the Secretary of State. They made these rules as of June, they were not applicable anymore. And I guess the best way to say it is the county boards are given a responsibility by their constituents to represent them. If the county boards have a legitimate belief, whether it's correct or not, it's a legitimate belief that their constituents could somehow have been injured by what they deem to be an illicit or somehow faulty election. Who makes the decision about that count? The state attorney, the state secretary of state who benefits from this, or the board that's supposed to be representing and protecting the interest of the citizens of its county. It's obvious that this has to be addressed, and hopefully in your decision, you'll determine whether the boards have this authority and can represent their people, or whether the boards just have to rubber stamp whatever the Secretary of State determines to be a good election.
Well, then I'll ask you this. Where would I find that the authority for the proposition that the boards have discretion with respect to whether or not to complete the canvas, their parts of the canvas, and certify, and whether or not they can direct a recount of some kind if they are concerned about it? Where is that authority?
Well, I think, Judge, the authority... Since it hasn't, I don't think it's been really tried, but I think the authority is related directly to their responsibilities and the rules and regulations that govern their behavior in each county as to, what they're responsible for. And in these counties, they are responsible to make sure that their constituents get a full and fair and election. That's just their responsibility. On the other hand, it's the Secretary of State's responsibility to make sure that she puts forward a full, fair, and safe election, and that she or whoever's in that office addresses these issues regarding certification directly. It can't respond. It can't be responsible to rely on some board that they have no control over. They have no relationship with, other than the review their opinions. And Secretary of State didn't do that in this case. Our contention is, and our pleading is directed to, I mean, pleading is not a pleading. Our contest is directed to say that had, and our experts will testify, that they believe had the proper inspections been done, which were created under statute because the legislators knew we were going into a new computer age and wanted to make sure that they had a standard set, that these standards have to be addressed and held by the Secretary of State and no one else. And when she didn't do that, when she failed in that duty and it wasn't properly supervised and these weren't properly vetted machines, we got chaos. I mean, we've attached to, as an exhibit, 80 emails that circulated in Pima County talking about the mass chaos they were having trying to count this vote. And our contention is that if the machines were proper and vetted and inspected, we wouldn't be here because we'd have no basis to complain. If I made that clear, I was kind of trying to think while I talked to you. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I did have a question about that because I was looking at your response, in particular at page 14, and obviously, or I think you would agree, maybe you won't, so I'll ask, that pointing out irregularities doesn't, even if they occurred, doesn't give rise to a valid election contest unless there is fraud or unless the result was affected by the error. And I think in on page 14, you are conceding that you're not alleging any fraud occurred. Your allegation is based upon the claim or concern that these irregularities affected the outcome. Is that accurate? I just wanted to make sure I got that right in terms of what you are arguing.
Well, Judge, I think we're arguing in terms of the case from 1958 or 59, Griffin, that's still the standard. And that case says that, and I quoted it, that we're entitled to have a hearing on charges of fraud or deception. And we believe that there's deception in the practice of state of not dealing fairly and coming forward to the different counties that protested the election and saying to them, you know, maybe you have a point, give us your evidence, we'll consider it. I mean, that's the way the Secretary of State should behave herself. She deceived them. She said to them, no, this is a great election. Everything's fine. Your complaints are groundless and you're going to do what I want, or I'm going to put you before a criminal tribunal of some form, and you can get a lawyer and pay $100,000 to be saved. That's exactly what really happened when you boil all the fancy words away. This was a deception because she's telling them they have no grounds for concern when they absolutely did.
Okay, and tell me again what the grounds for concern were.
Well, Judge, there's probably six or seven concerns, but I think the really material concern is that it goes back to the statute and the statute related to elections. And it's clearly defined in these statutes that the companies have to be vetted every 2 years and the equipment has to be vetted every 2 years. And if you make any material change in the voting system, whether it's the tabulators or whatever, that has to be recertified. And none of this was done. They were told it was done, and they were told that a three-year-old inspection, 3 years, not 2 years, was adequate. But in point of fact, it proved out not to be adequate because there's chaos across the state. These machines cause problems, and we have no complaint against, you know, these counties that were victimized. We have a complaint against the person who had the responsibility to make sure. The Secretary of State was elected in a controversial election. She experienced this. And then she tells the public she's going to fix this, and it's worse. That's what happened here. They've been deceived.
Okay. But would you agree that although there were certainly concerns raised, there isn't any specific allegation that votes that were run through the tabulation machines weren't counted. There's just a concern that they, some of them might not have been if they were in the box number three, right?
Did this lady read it at all?
Yes. Yes, that's a contention. But the contention underlying that is people should have, the public and the counties should have been able to depend on the certifications of those machines and the assurances of the Secretary of State that it would be a smooth election. They should have been able to rely on that. The end result is they couldn't rely on it at all. That's the real issue. And, specifying that, I could petition you to look at the ballots. I could send people in there. We could go through that whole exercise. And if you think that you need that kind of evidence, I would request be able to do that. But the real issue is more fundamental. We need to assure that right now, probably 50% or close to 50% of the citizens of this state have serious questions about this. I can't tell you how many people call here. I don't even know who they are. And they're calling me. I can't get off the phone. We need you to do this. We're hoping you'll do that. Well, you know, that causes me to, I'm semi-retired. I mean, I'm going to be out of the law. I took this because they needed somebody to do it. And so, you know, I guess I have the least risk. I mean, if I get into real trouble and get disbarred here, I'm 76 or 77 by the time they get to it. But the more important factor is, as a voter in Arizona, I question it. As a voter in Arizona, tens of thousands, if not millions of people are questioning it. And we need to set forth a standard. That's what we're really trying to get here. The appellate court, because one side or the other is going to appeal this. The appellate court needs to set standard as to who's in charge. Secretary of State, because they write a law, what they think is a law, or the boards in these counties. And what do we mean? Does the statute that requires somebody to sign something that's put in there by the legislature, is that material? Or we can just say, oh, that doesn't matter. What the legislators, you know, provided for specifically doesn't matter. We're just going to undercut that. After they spent all the time and negotiation, get what they came up with, we're going to ignore it. And there's no civil rules, but oh, well, you know, nobody argued that before. So I guess we can just do it. That's where we are. And we need to fix that. That's why I'm here, Judge. I'm not here because I'm going to get some big victory or I need to get out in front of on the steps and publicize myself. I'm here because as I go out, I'm concerned about my vote. My family's concerned about their votes. Everybody I know is concerned, literally. Even I have some very liberal clients. They're concerned. Everybody wants their vote counted. And I don't understand from a party that their mantra is every vote should be counted. That's the mantra of this party. That's the mantra these men will use in other cases. Every vote has to be counted. But in this case, we don't need to worry about that. Is that where we're going? That's where it looks, you know, to the public. So I think we need to set a standard. And that's what I'm asking you to do. I know it's a lot to ask. Believe me, Judge. I mean, I wouldn't be a judge for anything. I like what I'm doing. I wouldn't want to have to make these decisions because I know how difficult it can be. But that's where I am, Judge. I mean, I'm happy to go on if you'd like. I'm sure these other gentlemen are chomping at the bit to go at me. But
okay. Thank you, Mr. McCauley. So I guess, Mr. Gay, I'm going to finish. I'll start with Mr. Morgan. Anything for rebuttal?
Your Honor, from the Secretary. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll let Mr. Morgan.
No, I don't. We can go in the same order as before. Mr. Gamma, go ahead.
And this may be mercifully quick, Your Honor. I don't have anything to add. Again, the Secretary rests on her papers and the argument provided before. Nothing you heard today from Mr. McCauley changes the simple fact that this case must be dismissed, and we request that you do so promptly. So thank you, Your Honor.
I appreciate your brevity because my shoulder's killing me and I can't take anything till we're done here. So just a personal note there.
Yeah, Judge Craig Morgan for Secretary-elect Fontes. Look, I've heard so many contradictions. My head hurts. I agree with Mr. Gayona. The only thing I will note for the court is, you know, the irony of saying that this entire case should not, this entire motion should be denied just because the civil rules don't apply when in paragraph B of the demand for relief, they're literally asking for, and I quote, discovery under the civil rules. And I think what you've heard in the last half hour or so illustrates the complete nonsense that is this case and the total harassment that it has caused these defendants who have had to pay real money to actually address these issues. And I just don't want that to be lost on the court.
Not worried about the voters.
Cannot think of a single excuse for why this action is here. I'm embarrassed for the voters. I'm embarrassed for Arizona. And I'm ashamed that anybody would file a civil action who's been admitted to the bar that I love so much and make these sorts of allegations. And I just ask the court to please dismiss this action and take whatever appropriate action the court deems necessary to make sure that these sorts of things don't happen again. Without some investigation and a forethought. Thank you, Judge.
Okay. Go ahead. Yes, you can.
I resent that. It's a personal attack. It's unwarranted. These are well-founded allegations, and he's made an attack on the record, which is grossly unfair.
Okay.
And if this in the public, I would slander him for it. But since he's protected by the pleading standards and the court system, I have no recourse. There's no excuse for a lawyer like him to attack me like this in front of you.
Oh, okay. Here's what I'm going to tell everyone. Tempers are high. You're exhausted. This is such a short timeline. Everybody has to be working around the clock. I can tell you, I've been working around the clock to read lot of election cases this week. So I understand that tensions are high. I'll just remind everybody that your ability to zealously represent your clients doesn't need to compromise your professionalism toward one another. But let's talk about next steps. So I know you need this ruling quickly, and I promise you I have been working to make sure that you will get it today. I do, however, want to be able to take your arguments today into consideration and to provide you all with a written explanation for my ruling, because I think that you all deserve that, your clients deserve that, and the citizens deserve to see an explanation in writing. So I'm just going to ask you to give me a little bit of time. I'm going to take this under advisement, but I will get my ruling filed and emailed to all counsel before or maybe at 5 p.m. Today. What I'm going to do
show trial.
Is just set a status conference on Monday. I know that there was some concern that, if she denies the motions, we're going to have to hurry up and have an evidentiary hearing on Monday. In thinking about that, I know that's not realistic. I also don't want you to spend the
show
weekend
trial.
Panicking about it. So what we will do is we will kind of have a placeholder for a status conference on Monday if need be, set an evidentiary hearing. If need be, I will extend the hearing date 5 days, as the statute allows me to do, to give you all some time to prepare without having to incur time and costs unnecessarily if it turns out that we don't need to move forward. So does 9 a.m. Monday as a placeholder work for you all?
Your Honor, Andy Gayona on behalf of the Secretary. I have an oral argument in another election contest before Judge Thompson that's set from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And then my other restriction is an oral argument in a third election contest before Judge Jansen in Mojave County that's set from 1:30 to 3:30, I believe. So I could work. Those are my limitations there.
Well, it wouldn't take much time. What if we... it may be moot, but I just want to have something in place because, like I said, I appreciate the argument. I want to have some time to digest those things today. But
show
what about
trial.
If we just put a placeholder in for 8:30, and it'll be virtually, and it'll be a quick status conference, really just to talk about a hearing, setting a hearing if we need to. Would that be okay?
Your Honor, that works for the Secretary. Thank you for working around our schedule.
It's fine for Mr. Fontes, Your Honor.
Oh, it's fine with me, Judge. I'm the least active of the lawyers on this.
Well, like I said, I won't. I appreciate getting a little extra time after today's hearing to type up what I hope will be a good explanation for my ruling. And like I said, I promise you we'll have that by 5:00. My staff is definitely going to want to get out of here by then too. So I will get it done. I appreciate all of the hard work by all of the lawyers in this case. And I appreciate the chance to consider the arguments that you've all made. So thank you very much. Good luck on the other matters that you are working on this week. And is there anything else that we need to talk about before we adjourn?
And we can't make any of the times because I'm booked on other cases because this election was a sham.
Because I'm the only lawyer that will represent him.
I know. You know who he reminds me of, Shady?
He reminds me of Alex Kaplan.
No, the lawyer that we had. This guy. Check him out.
I believe you have turned on in the video settings.
Listen to him.
You might want to.
Did you hear me, Judge?
I can hear you. I think it's a filter.
It is, and I don't know how to remove it. I've got my assistant here. She's trying to, but I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
I can see that. I think if you click up arrow next to this.
That reminded me of our guy. That was like our guy. You reminded me of the cat, Shady.
Oh my God, that was so good. Yeah, that was perfect. That's definitely a better memory.
Did you hear his voice? You heard his voice,
it sounded almost exactly like him.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not a cat.
Not a cat. Whew. Wow.
Okay. So very interesting.
Yeah.
I think she's going to dismiss this. I'm pretty sure that she is going to dismiss this at the end of the day, and then they're going to have to appeal and take it to the next level up. That judge is not having it. I do not think that she read any of that. She does not care about the voters that were disenfranchised in Arizona, and I don't. I have a sneaking suspicion that she will not let this move forward to evidentiary hearing without an appeal going upwards. But that's just my opinion on the way I was watching her react there.
We do have breaking news from Kerry Lake's case, Shady Groove. Apparently, the lawsuit against Maricopa County in regards to ballot inspection, the judge has granted in part Lake's request. It is ordered that Lake's petition to inspect is granted to request 1, 2, and 4, subject to the following conditions. Plaintiff file with the clerk of the court and bond in accordance to the requirements of the ARS 16677B and submits the name and the contact information of her chosen ballot inspector by 12 p.m. Friday, December 15th, 2022. Shady, they can't even. It's the 16th, isn't it?
Jeff, today is the 16th. Is it? It's Flannel Friday, bro. I'm sweating over here. It's definitely Friday. What's going on?
And they can't even get the date right, let alone an election right. Wow. Sorry.
Trust the science.
So on Friday, December 15th, 2022, and simultaneously files as a notice confirming payment of the bond by the court and copying email of all the other parties. The inspection docs do not in any way disturb the integrity of any ballots or their storage or maintenance of the custody of the Maricopa County or disclose the identity of any voter as connected to any given ballot. You know what? You can disclose my identity if I'm a voter. All right?
Yes.
I don't care. 3, the inspection does not in any way interfere with the ongoing recount of the 2022 election results. You can recount counterfeit ballots. You're still going to have counterfeit ballots in a recount.
Sir, that 4. Check.
Yeah. That inspection shall begin at 8 a.m. Tuesday, December 20th. I mean, I don't even know if that date's right, Shady.
Let's see, what, Tuesday the 20th? I think they did get that one right.
All right, so what, two out of, well, they probably won't make that mistake again.
50-50 right now, bro.
hold their beer, because authorizing the inspection is automatically vacated if the court dismisses plaintiff's verified petition statement in its entirety, filing the full briefing on the motion to dismiss. It is further ordered that Maricopa County defendants provide to the clerk of the court and the name of the contact information of their preferred ballot inspector by 12 p.m. on Friday, December 15th, 2022. It is further ordered that Maricopa County defendants provide that the court the name of the proposed inspector for the court named its representative pursuant to ARS 16-677B by 12 p.m. on guess what date, Shady? Friday, December 15th.
75% wrong in that. In what you just read, not bad. That's like that's like almost right around the percentage of the voting machines that didn't work, Jeff.
I mean, you just can't make this up, guys. I'm sorry, you just can't make this up. What a sham system they've got in Maricopa County. I'm so sorry, guys. That election, boy, you were paying attention, is a shit show.
It's show trial.
Show election, Shady.
Well, very interesting, because, you know, multiple times we went back to talk about the only county specifically talked about in Q and the discrepancies of the vote there is Maricopa County. And look at this, a few years later, here we are.
Well, let's just look at that, Shady Groove. M-A-R-I-C-O-P-A. Oh, boy, look.
Maricopa.
Oh, Arizona, our governor won by 328,000 votes. D senator is winning by 32,000 votes. Our governor won Maricopa County by 325,000 votes. D senator winning Maricopa County by 32,000 votes. 350,000 vote swing to D senator. Are you kidding me? Q. All right. Legit. He didn't say, are you kidding me? Yeah. That's 11-12-2018, guys.
That is too legit to quit.
Yeah. By the way, Congress, breaking news, Congress passes a defense bill nearly $45 billion over Biden's budget request as the debt climbs to $32 trillion.
Wow. They've never done this, guys. This is remarkable, because they have never done this. They should not be doing this. They should be waiting until the new Congress is seated before they decide to steal from us even more. You know, reminds me of that video you played yesterday, Jeff, where it was each dot was $100,000 going over to Ukraine. It just got some, it just added some more dots, I think, bro.
So let's go QElon. QElon said, and soon, ladies and gentlemen, the coup de grace. Look at that.
Let's go QElon.
Let's go QElon. And a coup de grace is a final blow or shot given to kill a wounded person or animal. Bird. He administered the coup de grace with a knife. So what is the coup de grace coming, Shady Groove?
I think that he's getting ready to put out the information that shows where the government higher-ups in the State Department and the DOJ and Fauci and many others in the CDC were telling a private company to censor Americans' speech and lie about ivermectin, lie about what the content of the hospitals were, lie to you about literally every aspect of this over and over and over again, and they laundered all of those lies through Twitter.
Yeah. By the way, I found some found some dog comms. This is I tagged iPod in it because he loves dog comms. But Seth Olbermann is big mad that he gets treated the way he treats others. Keith Olbermann is now using his dog comms Twitter account to evade Elon Musk's banning spree.
Oh, let's go report him.
Let's be anywhere, but apparently I've been permanently banned from Twitter by Elon Musk for not doing something he claimed he would never ban anybody for doing. What a friggin' candy-ass, lying, hypocritical, self-contradicting little paranoid snowflake that apartheid Clyde really is. And I was hardly the most important journalist or commentator who got it. Aaron Rupar, Donnie O'Sullivan, Ryan Mack. It's the baptism scene from the Godfather movie, and we all got whacked by Don Elon Musk Leone. For a moment last night, I thought, you know, he did this just so we'd all forget about Donald Trump's stupid baseball cards from yesterday. Let me talk about that, too. Plus Thurber's The Catbird Siege and much more on the Friday Countdown podcast, now available wherever you get your freaking podcasts, except Twitter, because you know.
He's using his dog's Twitter account to ban evade. Media Matters catches ban evading account.
I would have rather heard from his dog.
Unreal. I mean, this is, you just can't make this stuff up, guys. I'm telling you. What else do we got going on today, Shady Groove?
A few things are going on. One thing real quick I want to give the audience to pay attention to is I'd like for you to go dig into this RNC story that is coming out about the way that the RNC treated Donald Trump and all of you that sent in money. I think it was roughly about $200 million that you guys sent as the RNC was saying, fight for Trump, help Trump right after the election in 2020. And now it's come to light that the RNC lawyers were actually threatening different political officials and other people in the background, even DOJ officials and many others, to be quiet and to not stand up for fighting for Donald Trump in that election, and that they were actually threatening lawsuits against them if they did. So your $200 million that you gave to the RNC to fight for Trump went to not fight for Trump.
Well, imagine that, Shady.
Isn't that messed up, dude?
All right, guys. I want to also, episode 16, Still in the Fight came out December 14th. We're noticing a lot of shadow banning lately, guys. This is Patriot Games with Greg Phillips and Catherine Engelbrecht. You're not going to want to miss it. It's 35 minutes out of your day. Make sure you get over there and find it. I put the link in the description, but it's Catherine and Greg, guys, and Greg's beard.
And Greg apologizes for not being able to be here today. The man is very busy and couldn't make it in today for Flannel Friday, but he is here in spirit, and he is out there fighting for all of you and attempting to get these crooks exposed any way we can.
Yeah, a lot of exposure going on nowadays. I cannot do this. I can't do this anymore. Trump's former advisor, Steve Bannon, slams Donald's major announcement about superhero NFTs and says, step up your game.
Ooh, this triggered a lot of them, dude. This triggered a lot of them little, you know what I'm saying.
He went to that guy for money.
He went to the island.
I don't know if he went to the island, but he went to that guy for money.
He went to the guy for money.
Yeah, I don't know about the other stuff. You know, got to make sure we're right. We're always wrong.
Until we're right.
We're always wrong. Always. So, and then check this out, guys. This is from Patriot Arts Farm. Check this out, Shady. You're going to freak. This is creepy.
I am not Morgan Freeman, and what you see is not real. Well, at least in contemporary terms, it is not. What if I were to tell you that I am not even a human being? Would you believe me? What is your perception of reality? Is it the ability to capture, process, and make sense of the information our senses receive? If you can see, hear, taste, or smell something, does that make it real? Or is it simply the ability to feel? I would like to welcome you to the era of synthetic reality. Now.
Whew.
Boy, that is creepy.
A little creepy
for Friday, towards the end of the show there. You put the
Also, I want to finish the creeping out with this. Check this out. This is 1999, Fauci.
Many scientists are beginning to believe that a vaccine against AIDS may be impossible to make and too dangerous to test.
If you take it and then a year goes by and everybody's fine, then you say, okay, that's good. Now let's give it to of 500 people. And then a year goes by and everything's fine. I say, well, then now let's give it to thousands of people. And then you find out that it takes 12 years for all hell to break loose. And then what have you done?
If you vaccinate someone and they make an antibody response and then they get exposed and infected, does the response that you induce actually enhance the infection and make it worse? And the only way you'll know that is if you do an extended study, not in a normal volunteer who has no risk of infection, but in people who are out there in a risk situation. This would not be the first time, if it happened, that a vaccine that looked good in initial safety actually made people worse. There was the history of the respiratory syncytial virus vaccine in children, which paradoxically made the children worse. One of the HIV vaccines that we tested several years ago actually made individuals more likely to get infected.
Sad little man.
Wow.
This guy has got a comeuppance just around the corner, my friends. Come around to the first of the year whenever we get the new house seated and we start to set up some of these investigations. It's going to be really interesting to watch how Fauci attempts to avoid the subpoenas and attempts to avoid coming to testify. He is not going to want to be on every TV station here real soon, because the truth about this guy, I think, is maybe right on the cusp of coming out. If this stuff comes out this weekend, it's going to be a very interesting holiday for all of you to be able to talk straight to your family about what it was that happened during that 2 years of absolute utter society destruction is what they were doing. People say COVID. It's not COVID. It was social destruction, social engineering. That's what it was.
And if you guys want your you just ask them, do you want your pseudoscientific dictatorship? Well, you're getting it. And if we don't stand up and realize it, you're going to get it, Shady Groove. They're going to get it.
That's exactly right. You're gonna get what they give you if you don't stand up and demand what you want.
Listen to this from Bill Cooper in 1999, March of 1999. Listen to this, guys.
How many of you read my book, Behold a Pale Horse? I would assume that at least some of you have. In there, I made a statement. I started to say, for which I was ridiculed and chastised and called a nut, but I was called a nut and ridiculed and chastised for everything that I wrote in that book. But I wrote in that book that the New World Order, the utopian socialists consider violent tendencies to be genetic, and that they would identify people who have these violent tendencies, and they would collect their genealogies, and sometime in the future, all of these people are just going to be wiped out right off the face of the earth, and that they would be collecting genetic samples and genealogies. Well, everybody said, you're nuts. They're never going to do this. Well, I wasn't nuts, and I'm not nuts. What I said was absolutely correct. It's true. You can look for a law sometime in the future that will mandate that doctors take tissue samples and turn them in to these genetic databases on anybody who has any kind of contagious disease. And they'll say that the reason is to find out if there is a predisposition to contagious diseases, and they want to have this on database so that they can know what segment of the population is going to be infected by swine flu in the year 2020, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You watch.
Mm-hmm. Not a prophet, but boy, that is sure spot on, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, that sure is profitable. All right, Shady Groove, we're going to go out with the ascendancy of the pseudoscientific dictatorship. I hope you guys had a great Flannel Friday. I'm hot. I'm taking this thing off. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Shady Groove, another great week. We're not going to have are we going to have a replay this weekend, Q Lounge Live?
Yep. Yeah, we're going to have a replay on Sunday night if you guys like to come over. We're going to be replaying Censorship is Violence. This one goes back to a little bit early on in the year, but I think it's very relevant because just like, whenever you leave specific things, when you censor your own Substacks and you leave things out, kind of interesting what's going on in the landscape out there. So I think it's relevant. Plugging into a little bit of what Trump said and what's going on in the Anon community these days. Much love, guys.
What time is it? What time is it on?
8 o'clock.
Day?
8 o'clock Sunday.
Right here, rumble.com/MG show. See you guys.
Love you guys. Shady. Love you guys. Thank you all.
Much love, everyone. Thank you for all your support and prayers.
In this world government, there will be no individual rights, only privileges. Privileges can be granted or denied at will by the world's supergovernment. All property is to be owned by the state. There will be a redistribution of wealth in order to eliminate class differences and level the standard of living to a much lower level in the advanced nations, such as the United States of America, and to a higher standard of living in the so-called third world nations. This leveling of the standard of living will be accomplished through a global economic collapse. The economic collapse will fulfill the goal of Marx and Engels' Communist Manifesto, which mandates the elimination of the middle class. All county and state governments are to be eliminated and replaced with regional government. And those of you listening who are in county and state and city governments already have felt the pressure to bring this about. These regional governments are, in fact, already in place. Regionalism is gradually taking control throughout America. There will be no more cash money. All trade will be accomplished by a system of computer credits, with accounts accessed through debit cards or computer chip implants, which will also serve as personal identification, driver's license, and etc.
www.mg.show. Boom.